Well, I'm very happy to be here. I haven't been here at the KITP for a few years, and it's always nice to come back. I'm going to give a talk that has a very different point of view from most of the others at this meeting. It's going to be a top-down talk in terms of philosophy, not so much in terms of technical details. And in particular, in my view, string theory is an extremely promising approach for some underlying ultimate theory. However, string theory immediately gets into the issue that there's this enormous landscape of possible vacua of the string theory, and we don't really know how to select between them. And some subset of those vacua are consistent with everything that we know about nature. And from the limited studies that have been done on that subset, it seems like although one can get just the MSSM, one often gets more general structures that may contain what I call remnants, which are just things that are emerge from a particular vacuum that do not necessarily solve any problem of the standard model. They merely are things that are there that happen to be a feature of that particular compactification. So I'm going to sort of talk about some various aspects of that, and in particular what from some limited investigations are suggesting might be the more plausible or more likely types of remnants that might be there. Some things I think are much more likely than other things. And in the process, one runs into questions like uniqueness and minimality. Okay, so first let me start out with one of the more controversial aspects, uniqueness versus environment. We know that gauge interactions are to some extent very unique, up to the groups and representations and spontaneous symmetry breaking, their properties are determined by a symmetry principle, and that's wonderful. On the other hand, Yukawa interactions, which are responsible for flavor physics, are largely unconstrained unless one adds some sort of new symmetries or new principles to our understanding of physics. And new symmetries might be of many different types. And there's been an enormous effort along those lines, not just in the neutrino sector, but there's been an enormous effort in trying to add symmetries and try to find some more unique aspect of Yukawa interactions. And especially in the neutrino sector, there's been just huge amount of effort, usually not, but not always, in the traditional seesaw context. And a lot of the models that were constructed took a big setback with the observation that theta 1-3 is not equal to zero and theta 2-3 is not equal to 45 degrees, and that excludes many of the models that had been constructed, but many can be saved by new perturbations. But at any rate, that's in the neutrino community and to some extent in the Flaber community generally, that's considered the way to go. Now, but there is another possibility, and I'd like to give a historical analog, namely Kepler's Mysterium Cosmographicum. Kepler spent a significant portion of his time trying to construct a model of the orbits of the planets in our solar system by trying to nest various Platonic solids within one another. And he had limited success in that. But I think most people would now agree that that was not the right approach for that particular problem, and that the planetary orbits, in fact, are not due to a uniqueness principle of that form, but are an accident of the environment of how that particular solar system was formed. And so the environmental paradigm for things like Yukawa interactions is perhaps there is no simple underlying symmetry explanation. It's possible that the scales and hierarchies are still determined by Froggatt-Nielsen-like powers or exponentials, perhaps. but perhaps the details are more or less random. And for example, in this string landscape, which may have, as many people have estimated, possibly 10 to the 600 vacua or more, well, these different vacua have some subset are realistic with different groups, different remnants, different hierarchy mechanisms, different parameters. It's possible that many of these vacua are part of some vast multiverse of vacua, perhaps sampled, different ones sampled by some form of inflation. If that's the case, then the particular one that we live in may be, for all practical purposes, just an accident. And although for that vacuum there may be some ultimate explanation for the details, it would probably be beyond any simple symmetry that we're likely to have. So this is another paradigm that is, I think, quite plausible for things like, for many aspects of our physics. And I think it's important to at least keep this in mind. Many people don't like this point of view. A lot of people are violently opposed, but I think it's a quite plausible one, and I think it's a valid question to try to approach how one can distinguish between these paradigms. Now, I don't have an answer to that question. That's a fundamental problem for the future, but I'll make some very tiny, trivial little steps maybe in that direction. Now, this is somewhat repeats some of the same points. I'll make some comments about the string landscape, which again is perhaps very enormous. Many of the vacua contain the standard model or the MSSM, but as I already stated, many involve TEV scale or other scale remnants that are just there for the particular compactification, even though they are not motivated in the traditional sense of solving some problem. And in particular, they may not be minimal. So I'd like to, in one slide, address the question of minimality. And the slide is this one. For anybody who's ever learned anything about neutrinos, this will be self-explanatory. Sometimes the minimal solution is not the best solution. Now, some bottom-up ideas are unlikely to emerge from simple perturbative string constructions. A good example are the very large dimensional representations, such as the 126 dimensional representation of SO10 that are so often invoked in neutrino physics. I'm not claiming it is a theorem, but it's very unlikely that such things will emerge in very many string vacua. And on the other side, top-down studies may suggest interesting new phenomena or physical mechanisms. And one good example are string instantons, which are analogs of field theory instantons, non-perturbative brain configurations that can lead to exponentially suppressed violations of global symmetries. And there have been applications of that sort of idea to the mu problem, to generating Majorana or Dirac neutrino masses, etc. So again, I think it is useful to try to map what I call the string likely or string unlikely classes of new physics and mechanisms, and to contrast this with field theory. And again, I'm more advocating a goal here. It's not that I've actually solved all this problem, but let me give you a little cartoon of what I mean. So in some sense, here is the standard model, and this is the allowed manifold of all possible theories, and here's our standard model, MSSM, some constrained version of it, supersymmetry generally, strong dynamics. And when I talk about strong dynamics, by the way, I'm talking about strong dynamics in our sector of nature. All right, so now minimality would suggest the exploration of some subset of extensions of the standard model or some versions of the MSSM that are, close. On the other hand, it could well be that if one had the technical power to explore the string landscape in detail, it might find that most of the allowed points emerging from the string theory, let's see, are in a different region that includes things that are not minimal. And I, by when I say allowed by string compactifications, what I mean is ones that are perturbatively connected to our world. A string theory could certainly give strong dynamics at the 10 TeV scale in our world. If that's the case, then I don't think that top-down string approach is the best way to think about it. So I'm talking about string theory that generates perturbatively new physics in our world. So, and one can, at least in some approximation, start to explore various parts of the string landscape to see what types of new physics and extensions really do emerge. Now, let me say, what are some of the things people have found? I mean, for many years now, people have been attempting to look at particular string constructions, heterotic, intersecting brains, type 2B with fluxes, etc., more generally M theory, and they often find various remnants. U1 primes or larger gauge groups are very, very common in extensions, in explorations. Larger Higgs and neutralino sectors than the MSSM are very, very common. One often finds, for example, more than two Higgs doublets, or if one finds scalar singlets. And this, of course, would have implications not only for Higgs physics, but for neutralinos and dark matter, et cetera. Extremely common are quasi-chiral exotics. By that, by quasi-chiral, I mean a new chiral supermultiplets, if we're talking about supersymmetry, which are non-chiral, vector-like, with respect to the standard model gauge group, so that they don't impact precision physics or don't lead to Landau poles at 10 TeV, but which may be chiral with respect to extended symmetries beyond the standard model symmetries, and which would force them to have a relatively low mass. One often finds things like leptoquark or diquark or R-parity violating couplings. One often finds, for example, with the Z-primes, one often finds that they are family non-universal, which would lead to flavor-changing effects. Neutrino mass, and there's all kinds of mechanisms, including the traditional seesaw, but all kinds of others for Dirac Majorana masses have been found, some involving higher dimensional operators, some involving string instantons. Hidden sectors or quasi-hidden sectors. Very common. By a quasi-hidden sector, I simply mean that there might be some messengers between them, but for the most part, it's distinct. And people have talked for many years about Susie breaking hidden sectors. There's been a lot of talk recently about dark sectors, or they might just be random, and again, not having any particular obvious solution. And of course, one hopes that there might be portals that connect to these hidden sectors, though there need not be.
I'm not sure I know how to ask this question, but when you say typical out of 10 to the 600, it may just reflect the way you are searching the landscape.
Right? I wish that I could do that in a systematic way. I cannot. So all I can do is say that many people have tried to look at little bits and pieces, and they report things, and this is the sort of thing that has been found. You're asking me that I would love to be able to do a really systematic study of that, but that's far beyond my ability, so I do the little bit that I can. But I will address at least one little approach that justifies, bears on this a little bit. But these are typically things that people have found. One often has non-standard hypercharge embeddings, which can affect gauge unification. One can have fractionally charged particles. Color singlets are very common. Of course, that's probably, any vacuum that has that is probably not the one we live in. There can be low string scales involving large or warped dimensions, and even more exotic things. Now, there have been some papers, and this is a partial list, trying at least from some particular type of string construction, say a heterotic or a type 2b, there have been some attempts to quasi-systematic survey the landscape for things like counting the group factors or the numbers of families and so forth. And these studies, I think, have been very, very valuable and interesting. Most of these studies have not made any requirement that the vacua that they count are consistent with our vacuum. So don't necessarily require that you have a SU2, for example. There have been also many more studies searching for MSSM-like vacua, and here I'm not going to make any attempt to list all the authors. Now, unfortunately, to my mind, almost all of those studies, not all, but most of them have taken as their goal from the very beginning to find the MSSM. And so in whatever computer program they're using to do a search, they have if-then statements. And if they find any ingredient that's not in the MSSM, they forget about it. Well, that's fine. I mean, finding vacua that contain the MSSM is useful, but again, if there are other vacua that contain the MSSM and other things, I think that's very interesting too, to know what are the more likely extensions. And in particular, I'll talk about one work that I did with Jim Helberson here and Miriam Svedek a year or two ago that's a sort of, it's actually more bottom up. Analysis of ways of extending the MSSM that are consistent with certain top-down stringy constraints that are not present just on the MSSM itself. But before I get into that, I'll say that this was motivated by the intersecting type 2A brain constructions, but a lot of the criteria are probably much more general. And for those who are not used to such language, let me just in one slide review the ideas here. In the in this class of constructions, one has D6 brains, which fill the four ordinary dimensions and three of the extra dimensions, and one has stacks of these brains, and if you have capital N of them, that will correspond to a UN gauge group, and strings that begin and end on brains within that stack are the gauge bosons of the UN. And at the strings that are at intersections will correspond to normal chiral supermultiplets. Gravitons are propagating closed strings. The basic degrees of freedom from this cartoon are adjoints and bifundamentals. When one includes more complicated orientifolds, which involve image planes and discrete symmetries, one can get SON2N and SP2N groups, and one can generate symmetric and anti-symmetric matter representations as well. And one can get family structures from multiple intersections when you wrap these brains around, say, a torus. And Yukawa interactions can be hierarchical because they involve exponentials of the areas of these intersection triangles in the extra dimensions. And the explicit models of this type have often involved these sorts of things I mentioned, additional gauge factors, additional Higgs fields, quasi-chiral matter. But an interesting aspect is that the gauge structure is UN rather than SUN. And so there are extra U1s. Now these extra U1s are actually lead to effective global symmetries at low energy. I'll just say the words. The point is that the extra U1s are actually, from the point of view of the four-dimensional field theory, are anomalous. The anomalies are canceled by Chern-Simons terms, and the gauge bosons acquire string scale masses, but they survive as global U1s on the low energy theory, at least at the perturbative level, but which may be violated by non-perturbative stringy effects. Okay, in this paper, we decided to look at certain stringy constraints associated with these extra U1s and associated with the UN gauge symmetries generally, and these are the tadpole cancellation constraints. The tadpole constraints can be thought of as basically the Gauss's law in the extra dimensions. Consistency of those tadpole conditions puts constraints on the matter content of how the under these UN gauge groups that survives into the four-dimensional field theory. For example, for a UN theory, there's some number of A fundamentals minus number of anti-fundamentals plus some constraints from symmetric and anti-symmetric products must cancel. Now for SU3 and above, these conditions are just the ordinary field theory triangle anomaly conditions. But for U2 and U1, these are not required by normal field theory anomalies. These really are conditions from the underlying tadpole cancellation that are not conditions due just to the field theory itself. So there's a stronger condition from the string theory than if you had merely started from that string, from the corresponding field theory. And as Jem has explained to me, one way of thinking about that is that a field theory in four dimensions is a particular vacuum, but the underlying construction has many possible vacua, and there must be consistency for all of them. So your theory for a given SU2 or a given U1 has to be consistent not only for that theory, but for all the others that can be generated in the underlying theory by creating and annihilating brains. Now, okay, I think I said this. There are another condition in some of the simple constructions. One might start, for example, with a U3 cross U2 cross U1. Hypercharge typically will come about in this class of constructions as a linear combination of those anomalous U1s. And to be an appropriate hypercharge candidate, that particular linear combination must actually be free of normal field theory anomalies. And that places additional constraints on the theory that are, in this case, associated at least with this class of constructions. There may be additional combinations corresponding to one way of getting low energy Z primes in this class of constructions, not the only way. So we considered U3 cross U2 cross U1 and U3 cross U2 cross U1 cross U1 constructions, and these have been analyzed in great detail previously by other authors who found that there are 8 classes of quivers, so-called, that is ways of embedding the hypercharge into the U1s associated with this extended gauge group. And it turns out that the tadpole and U1 conditions are not satisfied by any quiver for any of those embeddings if you just have the MSSM chiral matter. None of them. If, with one extra assumption, and that is no quiver that just has the MSSM chiral matter is allowed None of the 3-node quivers would only U3 cross U2 cross U1 satisfy all of those conditions. If we make the assumption that any totally vector pair will get a string scale mass and disappear. So for example, if you had up type Higgs and the down type Higgs that were totally vector-like, then you have the mu problem, and it would presumably acquire a string scale mass. So if we require that that the H up and H down are not a vector pair under the extra U1s, then there's no 3-node quiver that satisfies the constraints. So what we did was we systematically started with the MSSM matter content for the 3-node and 4-node quivers, all 8 of the embeddings of hypercharge, and added extra fields in such a way as to see how one could satisfy these extra stringy constraints. We allowed up to 5 extra fields. We assumed that any purely vector pairs would decouple from the theory, but we allowed quasi-chiral pairs, and our goal is to try to investigate what types of new matter occurred and what types of extra things occurred in this particular construction. So what we found is that there's all kinds of extensions of the MSSM consistent within this framework with the stringy constraints. And the most common were actually new standard model singlets with hypercharge zero, so neutral singlets, however, always charged under one of these perturbative global symmetries. We also found very common quasi-chiral pairs. The most common were SU2 doublets, colorless SU2 doublets, which could be interpreted as either Higgs doublets or lepton doublets, depending on the types of couplings. Next most common were down-type quark isosinglets, that is a quark with left-handed charge minus a third, right-handed charge minus a third. The sort of thing that everybody is familiar from E6 models. There were non-abelian singlets, that is color singlets under things like an electron with an electric charge plus or minus 1, not occurring in doublets or triplets of SU2 or SU3. A few type up type isosinglets, a few type quark doublets. We found a lot of triplets of SU2. With zero hypercharge. I forgot to mention that before. We found a lot of shifted lepton or Higgs doublets with charges plus or minus 1 and plus or minus 2. There were a small number of fractional charges, which are excluded phenomenologically. A few chiral fourth families. However, those are also in trouble because of Landau poles and precision electroweak. We uncovered what we call shifted fourth families this way, which I'd never seen before. This is a fourth family in which, however, the quark doublets have charges minus a third and and minus 4/3, and in which the leptons have charges minus 1 and minus 2, and right-handed leptons actually occur in a triplet rather than a doublet. If anybody's ever written down, this is an anomaly-free family, which I'd never seen before, and if anybody's ever written it down phenomenologically, let me know, because I wasn't aware of it. Just to be a little more quantitative, for example, the types of, these are the pure standard model singlets, which however carry a global quantum number, very large number. I've already eliminated all the fractional charges, et cetera, et cetera. SU2 triplets with hypercharge zero, doublets, lepton or Higgs doublets, large numbers, the down-type quark isosinglets, the integer charge leptons, the up-type isosinglets, the quark doublets, et cetera, et cetera. So that's sort of gives a flavor. So at least this class of extensions, those types of quasi-chirals were very common. And although I'm not in any way trying to overstate what we did in this class, it's consistent with other types of specific studies of the types of things one finds. Quasi-chiral pairs, well, I don't want to go much into the phenomenology. In some cases, they can acquire mass by coupling to some standard model singlet, which acquires a VEB, or sometimes they may be generated by non-perturbative effects. And if they're quarks, of course, you can produce them by QCD, and they'll cascade down to the lightest. In specific models people have looked at, there's various ways of that they might decay, or one of them might be stable. And Jim Halverson told me yesterday he has an interesting paper coming out on this as a motivation for various dark matter models. Okay, how much time? I'm about, okay, I will be on time. So as I say, we removed the manifestly unrealistic ones. We examined the singlets, the standard model singlets, because there's two types of standard model singlets that are talked about frequently. Phenomenologically. One are the NMSSM type ones, the ones that can couple to an H up and H down, and if they acquire a VEB, generate an effective mu term. That's not the only way to get a mu term, but it's one way. And such things occur quite often. And there's others that could play the role of a right-handed neutrino, which could then possibly be associated with either a Dirac mass or with a seesaw type model. So both of those certainly occur for some of these singlets, but others are not, don't play those roles, don't have those quantum numbers. Some small sets, number of these quivers involve an additional non-anomalous U1 prime gauge symmetry with a massless Z prime, massless except for normal Higgs mechanism, and about 50% of those are family non-universal. And of course, family non-universal Z prime couplings means flavor-changing neutral currents, which could be, now we don't seem to have much in the way of anomalies in the B sub S system, but if they were, this would be a tree-level type way to generate an anomalous couplings there. Okay. So I have many, many slides which I'm skipping on that are more sort of standard phenomenological things, but I am out of time, so I'm just going to come to my conclusions. The string landscape, eternal inflation, to me suggests that one should take seriously at least the possibility that there may be some aspect of environmental selection in the what we see. Things may not all be unique. There may not be an underlying uniqueness principle. From the bottom up, we of course know that there may well be much more at the TEV scale than the MSSM. We've heard many talks in the last 4 days here. But I'm arguing from the top down, there may also be more. However, from not only what I presented, but the, you know, other attempts to derive the MSSM, there are some things that are much more likely, I think, than others, and as I've listed here. And although I don't claim that what we've done solves the problem, I would like, I think it would be extremely useful to, for people to think about ways of distinguishing between the stringy likely effects and the unstringy likely effects. And in particular, if one could say with some degree of confidence that this class of things are sort of smell stringy and this class of things don't smell stringy, I think that would be very valuable. Thank you.
Okay, question from Connie.
Thanks. For completeness, I'd like to mention that there's things you didn't mention that can greatly constrain what's going on in addition. There are always moduli when you go to four dimensions from the string theories, and you can't decouple them in general because the way that they're stabilized depends strongly on the supersymmetry breaking mechanisms, which determine much of what else is going on. A second one could mention of several would be the way that the mu term in the superpotential is kept from being at the Planck scale or string scale, but not allowed to be zero, again, is very constraining, again, for many of the things that you even talked about. But I'll restrict myself to mentioning those two.
Thank you.
Any other comments, questions, philosophical, non-philosophical?
yes.
Do you get any insight from these scans into some phenomena that I might not think they would have, like the absence of flavor-changing neutral currents or and that sort of thing?
Well, I would say just the opposite. The existence of flavor-changing neutral currents is not obligatory, but certainly is comes up in many of these Z-prime models. But, you know, I'm not here to try to talk about, even assuming supersymmetry, I'm not talking about the little hierarchy problem or anything like that. That's much more detailed than any of the things I've attempted to say here.
Any other questions? Okay, let's thank all this morning speaker. And nothing stands between you and lunch. The afternoon session starts at 1:30, I believe.